There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Did you put this in here again? I don't want it.
Come on, it's the first picture you ever took.
Well, I mean, all the more reason to leave it behind, right? What?
Nothing.
No, what is it?
It's nothing.
Mom.
This is the worst day of my life.
What are you talking about?
I knew this day was coming. I didn't know you were going to be so happy to be leaving.
I mean, it's not that I'm that happy. What do you expect?
You know what I'm realizing? My life is just going to go like that. This series of milestones. Getting married, having kids, getting divorced. The time that we thought you were dyslexic. When I taught you how to ride a bike. Getting divorced again. Getting my master's degree. Finally getting the job I wanted. Sending Samantha off to college. Sending you off to college. You know what's next? Huh? It's my funeral! Just go and leave my picture!
Aren't you jumping ahead by like 40 years or something?
I just thought there would be more.
And that right there is how lots and lots of parents around the world are feeling as their kids make that big move, going off to college, going off to university. It is a big time and there are a lot of emotions to make sense of. And to do that with us today, welcome Dr. Thuraya.
Hi, thank you.
That's just, you know, it really sums up so much. That it is a clip from the movie Boyhood when the main character, Mason, he is just off to make his way to college and just being very, you know, normal, taking it very casual, gathering his stuff. And she's put in that photo from his childhood. But, you know, he's not thinking about that anymore and he's looking forward. But his mom is holding on to so much.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that reaction that she had, which was, you know, my life is over, everything's gone, everything that I did, everything passed so fast, and now all I have to do is die. I mean, it's quite intense, but it shows a lot of the emotions that many women go through when they see their children grow up. And especially, you know, nowadays when women are working, it's even harder because then they feel even more guilty that I wasn't there for certain things and I should have been there. And so It's quite overwhelming for a lot of mothers to see their kids grow up. And then when they finally leave, it's almost like a solidifier of everything that they can't have anymore, which is very, very tough.
Completely. I mean, you know, the college or the university milestone is a big one, not just for the young person going off to university. You know, that's a big step for them. And there's a whole lot of emotions there and a whole lot of things that they've got to be ready for real life and for going out into the real world, often away from their parents as well. But parents are equally going through massive, massive changes. And I don't know that we hear enough about what the parent is feeling as much as we do about what kids might be feeling.
Right, because there's usually a lot of research that shows and tries to help individuals when they're making those changes. So you'll hear a lot of orientations for students when they go to university to sort of help them acclimate and really get used to the university environment, the bigger classes, the new friends, the new the new dorms, a whole bunch of different things. But we forget that there are parents that are sort of in the background that are also suffering from the change of my son or my daughter is now gone.
And you're looking at something like empty nest syndrome where, you know, like you're saying, the house is suddenly empty and the shuffles and you know, the noise that you used to have and that feeling of having your child there, your grown child, even if they're your grown child, they are still there. You feel like more of a family, but when they're gone and the house is empty, that just can lead to a whole lot of other feelings and issues.
Of course. And you know, Sally, when they talk about the empty nest syndrome, it's the assumption that the child that's going off to university is the last child. But sometimes what ends up happening is that first child that goes off to university and that, you know, the parents get that big shock that, oh my God, now they're gone. They forget that there are other children in the house. And so not just the parents that get affected, but they're also the siblings that get affected because either their older brother or sister are gone, but it's also my parents are suffering so much. What about me? I'm still here.
Exactly.
So there are so many different emotions going around and so many different feelings that are coming up as well.
It's kind of like the opposite of, you know, when you, after you've had the first baby and the siblings come along, you know, the first one kind of gets ignored because you're looking after the other ones. But it's kind of the opposite now because the older one has left and the other siblings and are thinking, well, I'm still here, like you said, and they're looking for that attention as well. And the parent is looking for that place to fill that void, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Of course. And you're trying to figure out also as a parent, how do I move forward from my child leaving? How do I become okay with the fact that I'm not needed with this child anymore? And you forget, sometimes parents can forget that either there are other children or there are each other. You know, the spouses can now reconnect. And that isn't something that many people think of in the moment.
That would be a really difficult thing. After you've had children for so many years, kind of being between you as two spouses, is it really difficult? Do you see it? Do you see people having difficulty kind of reconnecting after their children have left? Because sometimes you kind of look across and you think, my goodness, I've got so much more time for you now. Do we really know what to do with it?
Well, think of it this way. When you have children and when they go off to university, there's at least a 17-year gap there, which means your spouse has now grown 17 years older, and so have you. So obviously you have changed as an individual, and so has your spouse. So when you're reconnecting, it's almost like starting to date again and starting to get to know the person again, because they're not the same people, the exact same people you married to begin with 17 or plus years ago.
That's just an incredible thought when you think about that. And, you know, you do think about, oh, growing old together and that kind of thing. But that really puts it into perspective that you've kind of had this shared project for 17 years. But then you've also grown, you personally and your spouse have grown. And you may have actually missed some of those changes as well as time has gone by, as we've been busy with the kids, as we've been busy with life. And it, you know, does it take people sometimes by surprise to look at the person that they married and think, wow?
Actually, yes. A lot of people compare, and research compares it to the first year of marriage, where you're almost you're relearning everything about this individual, because now they're technically different people. And so when your kids are gone completely, not just the first child, but when your other kids are gone, now you're learning, who is this new person and how do I live with them, just me and them in the house all the time, face to face and 24 hours together.
Exactly. We are with Dr. Soraya Kanafani, clinical psychologist and clinical director at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. We are discussing the big life transitions. We started off talking about empty nest syndrome, what that can feel like when your grown children, they're going off to university, going off to experience real life and you're left behind, and the kind of thoughts and emotions that can stir up. And we've already got some great messages that have come through. This one saying, I think the empty nest syndrome has been looked at negatively by many people. I feel it's a great time for parents to make use of that extra time for themselves. They're now free to sign up for classes or other activities that they may not have had time for before. Embrace the change. However, I also think the empty nest syndrome doesn't always mean the time the children leave the house. How about the modern days when children are still living at home, but as if home is a hotel? Many families say they may all be in the same house, but each is busy on social media. This is also lonely for some parents because their children are there physically, but not in mind.
It's a very interesting concept, the idea of empty nest syndrome, even though the children are there. I mean, obviously, this is most probably referring to the teenage years, which is a very difficult transition for a lot of parents, because up until the age of 9, a lot of parents are very much needed, especially the mother and the father. They're needed for help with certain homeworks, for dealing with difficulties, with, you know, if there's an emotional feeling that the children will usually go to them. Parents are needed also for physical things, you know, make a sandwich, take care of them, bathe them when they're younger. But once they hit around the teenage years, their social structure and their social environment is a lot more important than their family. And in that time, parents tend to feel very disconnected and very much removed from the lives of their children. And I think this is what this individual is referring to, how it could be an empty, it could, stir up a lot of feelings that are very similar to the emptiness syndrome, because of the fact that you feel like you're not needed anymore, and that you miss all the years where you were needed and where you were a big part of the child's life. But that transition for those kids is actually one of the most important transitions in their life, and it's definitely a very important developmental stage for them. And even though they seem as if they don't really need you, they actually really do, and they need your emotional support, and they actually need to know that you are there for them.
See, that's the confusing part, I think, for parents, because you look at this kid who is not looking at you the same way that they used to. They're not around as much. I mean, you know, there's a reason why they call them ankle biters, because literally you couldn't get them off you when they were little. They couldn't stop talking. You couldn't get them off you. But then, you know, as they grow, you're not sure how to be there for them anymore. It kind of does get confusing, because like you're saying, they actually really do still need you. But we're not sure as parents how to be there for them in the right way. What is the right way to be there for your kids? Because sometimes it feels like, you know, you want to be there for them. You're talking to them and trying to find out what's going on. But it feels like, it may not be, it feels like they're a little bit, you know, shutting you out a little bit, because they're in their own new world now.
Absolutely. And it's almost like you have some sort of disease that they are pushing you so far away from them. The reality is not to take it personally. And I say this is the number one rule when you have a teenager in the house. Don't take this behavior personally, because it's not against you. It's just for them in that moment. They need to learn to become more independent, to learn more skills as they grow to become the adults that you want them to be. But at this moment, it's sort of like they are becoming that independent person, but with a safety net right under them. So it's sort of like bungee jumping with a net under you versus no net. So that's exactly what that is. They're trying all these new things. They're exploring, you know, new identities for themselves. They're forming new identities. But at least they know that you're there to love them and support them and to care for them and to ask them how they are, but not necessarily, you know, they might think they don't want you around, but they really just, they do.
They do, despite the fact that they might give you dirty looks if you try to hug them in front of other people or anything like that. They do actually want you to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crucial what you've just said, because I know sometimes I have taken it personally, to not take it personally as a parent, and just to understand that that is just how they are progressing and growing through life. And, you know, they may want that moment where they've got to figure it out for themselves, and just they don't know how to tell you, but that's what they want to do.
Absolutely. And a lot of parents will say to me, well, I wasn't like that when I was a teenager. I would have never spoken to my parents that way, or I would have never done that.
That's a big one.
That is a big one. But the reality is we didn't have the current way the world is now when you were a teenager. And so now the social media, the phones, the connectedness, the World Wide Web, there is just so the globalization of the world did not exist when you were a teenager. So times are different, which means the development of a teenager will be different than when you were a teenager. It can't all be the same.
We've got to always keep that in mind. But what do you think, what's been the biggest change from one generation to the one that we're looking at now that has been among social media so much that we've got to keep in mind as parents?
I think the connectedness. So, I mean, and that is, you're just always involved in social comparison. Then this is something that really didn't exist as much back then. It's not like social comparison wasn't around. It was, it's always been. But at least when a child went home, they had their safety at home. They were alone. They were their parents. They could connect to their parents. It was just them and their family. Whereas now, when a child goes home, they're still connected to everything at school. They're hearing things. They're seeing things. They need to learn about each other. I see a lot of teenagers, and they are Skyping with the same friends they spent the last 9 hours together with when they get home, which is something that didn't happen very much before, because we didn't have those mediums in order to connect so much. Maximum, you'd want to call your friend on the phone, and your parents would be like, 10 minutes, that's enough, like, get off the phone, right? Where now it's, you can Skype for hours while you're doing your homework and you're, you know, all of these different things. So kids nowadays, teenagers nowadays, are so much more connected than we ever were before. And that makes it difficult for the family dynamics as well, because everybody feels so disconnected from each other.
How do you bridge that, though? How do you bridge that gap? You know, you're trying to give them that space. Do you say you've only got a certain amount of time that you can connect with your friends because you see them every day at school? Why are you doing that? You know, and they hate that. They hate it when you say that to them. You know, get off the phone. Give me the phone. But, you know, how do you strike that balance? That's incredibly difficult, because, like you said, we only had like 10 minutes on the phone, on the home phone. It wasn't a mobile phone that you could take to your room or whatever. But how do you do that? How do you strike that balance?
Well, I usually tell parents not to try to limit their time with other friends, but increase time with family. So, you know, during dinner time, no phones on the table. And that goes for parents as well, to always schedule time on the weekend with just the family. So these kinds of things. So to avoid feeling disconnected completely, to have alone time as well with each child. So a mother to be able to have alone time with both sons and daughters, it doesn't have to be more than 5 or 10 minutes. Just checking in. How are you doing? How's everything? You know, you can always talk to me if you need something. How are your friends at school? You don't have to go through details, but how are you feeling? You know, so it's just really about connecting. And even if in the beginning the child doesn't respond well, as in they don't really share much, eventually they will see that the parent is there because they care, and they're not there to encroach over their current different lifestyle.
So stick with it. Don't give up.
Right.
But just be there in the background for them. We're talking big life transitions with Dr. Thuraya Kanafani. She is a clinical psychologist and clinical director at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. This one saying, empty nest syndrome, all new age mumbo jumbo nonsense. Get them out of the house as fast as possible and keep them out. Not still there at 30. Great comment. And we'll talk about that when we come back.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We are talking about big life transitions with Dr. Thuraya Kanafani from the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Some great messages coming in, Dr. Thuraya. This one about empty nest syndrome, which we were just discussing, saying that's all new age mumbo jumbo nonsense. Just get the kids out of the house as fast as possible. Keep them out, not still there at 30.
Well, you know, I think it's an interesting perspective, but it's not everybody's perspective. I mean, there are a lot of cultural differences as well in terms of when individuals should leave the house and when they shouldn't. But I would be interested, if you are still listening, I would be interested to know if this is a male or a female that would say this, only because I would find it very interesting to know that this is a woman who's saying this, because usually, more often than not, this is not always the case, but usually more often than not, it's the mother that feels the emptiness syndrome more than the father. Not all the time, but more often than not. So I would be interested to know the gender of this individual.
It is really interesting. Please text us back and tell us. But, you know, growing up in Australia, I'm from an Arab background. So I know that we as Arabs don't leave home until you get married. And that kind of goes for male and female. So you do plan for that, and but it's very much family focused, and you try to keep your family together for as long as possible. But I remember growing up, and you know, even in high school, hearing my friends' parents talk about, oh well, when they're 18, that's it. They leave home. They've got to be independent at that stage. I'm not supporting you anymore. That's it. So it is very different. You know, the cultural differences are there. It's not just with Arabs. You know, Indian communities as well are very similar. Spanish communities, different communities have different ways of looking at how that big transition in life of leaving home.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, just on this part of the world, you can see the different cultures that are here, and it's not acceptable for women or men to leave the house before they get married. It's not even heard of. Mm. And once they do get married and then they leave the house, that's when it's okay. If the family lives at home. Now, if the person obviously lives in a different country, then they're out of the house. But more often than not, we have to consider that not everything that we hear from a Western perspective is the correct perspective. It's just a different perspective. And there are different cultures that accept things in different ways. And so, yes, keeping them out, not still there at 30 is great from one perspective. But for other families, you may not be allowed out until there's marriage, even after you're 50.
Yeah. I mean, it's not to say that they're not encouraged. Obviously, they're adults at this stage. It's not that to say that you're not encouraged to go out there and be independent. But as to where you're living, and certainly it's about trying to keep the family together. And particularly something we were discussing off air is when your parents, when they're older, they're actually expected to stay with you. In certain cultures as well. It's not something, it's in other cultures, you know, they're very much independent. They don't want their children looking after them in old age. But that is one of those big life transitions as well that is treated very differently in different cultures.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, my parents come from different cultures, but from very Mediterranean cultures. They're very similar. And from the Italian side of my family, family is key. And it's just, you just have to take care of each other. There's no, it's not even discussed. It's just, it's really a given. It's just, it is what it is. And so when my grandfather passed away, my grandmother moved in with my family. This is my father's side, also Mediterranean, but more on the Arab side. And it was understood. He was the son and she was moving in, and that was that. And it was not something that was argued or discussed. It was just, it is what it is. But there are a lot of cultures that don't accept that. And, or they don't even, it's not even something that's considered because that's not what they believe is correct. And again, I like to say that there's nothing that's right or wrong in this kind of way. It's just, it's different. And so when we are considering what's good and what's bad and when it comes to individuals and when is the right time for them to move and when is the right time for them to stay at home, I think it's not about right and wrong. It's about, you have to look at your culture. You have to look at yourself. You have to look at the skills that you're building. And if, as long as you're learning the proper skills to become an independent person, then where you live is not necessarily as important as the life skills that you're building.
Definitely. And it may be that you pick up more of those interpersonal skills just because you're forced to live with a larger extended family. And it may be something that, you know, it makes it easier to deal with later on in life, because dealing with family is not an easy thing, particularly when you're talking about extended family. But it is fascinating to see different perspectives, and we want to hear from you. Definitely, please do share your story. Let us know. What did you do when it came to your parents getting older? What do you plan to do as you move into older age? It would be interesting to get different perspectives on that, and what people are planning, what people have done in the past. But it can be difficult. It can be difficult when you're expected to live with, it can be your mother-in-law or your father-in-law. How do you deal with that? How do you is there a way of kind of preparing for that, and just kind of, you've got to let go of certain things, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think one of the most important parts of having an in-law live with you, or living with your in-laws, which some cultures have as well, it's about the unity between you and your spouse. So when you and your spouse are sort of on the same page and you understand each other and you support each other, then what ends up happening is anything that's thrown at you from the in-laws doesn't, even though it does bother you, it is something that you can work through because you know that your spouse is supporting you. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there are going to be arguments and fights in the house, but that you know that your spouse is on your side.
So this is what we're talking about today. Transitions, those big life transitions, moving. You could be moving in with your elderly parents. You could be moving in with your in-laws. It could be your kids moving on to college or university. This is what's happening at the moment across the world, in fact. Kids going to college for the very first time. I'm going to play something that I found really interesting. This actually happened over the summer, and this was a commencement address from U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, and he delivered this commencement address at his son's graduation. And it went viral because the advice that he gave was not quite what you'd normally hear at a commencement speech.
Now, the commencement speakers will typically also wish you good luck and extend good wishes to you. I will not do that, and I'll tell you why. From time to time in the years to come, I hope you will be treated unfairly so that you will come to know the value of justice. I hope that you will suffer betrayal because that will teach you the importance of loyalty. Sorry to say, but I hope you will be lonely from time to time so that you don't take friends for granted. I wish you bad luck again from time to time, so that you will be conscious of the role of chance in life and understand that your success is not completely deserved and that the failure of others is not completely deserved either. And when you lose, as you will from time to time, I hope every now and then your opponent will gloat over your failure. It is a way for you to understand the importance of sportsmanship. I hope you'll be ignored so you know the importance of listening to others. And I hope you will have just enough pain to learn compassion. Whether I wish these things or not, they're going to happen. And whether you benefit from them or not will depend upon your ability to see the message in your misfortunes.
That is U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts. What did you think about that, Dr. Thoreau?
I actually love what he said, because I think it's something that a lot of us tend to forget, is that we don't really know what we have until we lose it. And at sometimes we, you know, life is unfair and things are not rosy and beautiful and positive all the time. And we have to acknowledge that things that are negative are the reality in life as well as the positive. And we have to prepare ourselves for not just the greatness and people appreciating us and people loving us and caring for us. We also have to prepare for when things don't go our way. And we have to build that emotional resilience to learn how to deal with things when they're just unfair.
Normally you hear, oh, you know, it'll be great. You'll be fantastic. You'll go out there and it'll be great. It's not great. Life is not great. And it's just, this is life. And I just think he just put it in the most eloquent, beautiful way. Pain is a great thing. And you're going to have a lot of it in your life. So embrace it.
Absolutely. And not just pain, but anything. Anything that we don't usually appreciate because we don't know that we had it until we lose it. We don't usually appreciate the basic things like friends. We don't understand how important they are to us until we lose one. Trust. We don't understand how important that is to our safety and security until we don't trust someone anymore. And so what he's saying is that these things will happen. You will be judged. You will be hated. You will be, someone will betray you. You will lose a friend that you wanted to keep. These things will happen, but he wants them to learn how to move forward and learn how to develop the necessary skills to handle what life will throw at you, not that what you think life is, which is a bubble of beauty.
And these are the things that are going to humanize us and to help us empathize with others and to really try to put ourselves in their shoes. Because when you've been through it, when you've been through difficulty, because that's how we understand things, through their opposites. You know, that you understand the good times, appreciate the good times through the bad times. And this is what he's saying.
Absolutely. And there's actually a very big debate about children that are given trophies and awards and medals for just showing up. And the reason why there's this massive debate on it is because of the fact that they're trying... Individuals who are okay with that are trying to build a person's self-esteem, a child's self-esteem, and let them become more confident. Whereas those on the other side are saying, well, yes, but we can do that in different ways. But when we're just giving them medals for showing up, we're giving them a medal for something they don't deserve, that they're not really working hard for. So
they haven't done anything.
Exactly. Except show up. And technically, they didn't even get themselves there. It's usually a parent that got them there. So the parent should get the award. But it's more on this debate continues as to how much is too much. How much are we coddling rather than protecting?
In my mind, there's no debate. Just don't give them the trophies for showing up. Because, you know, it's life is about learning. And this is what we want to hear from you. Do you agree with that? Should we be embracing the pain of life? Is that what is going to humanize us? Is that what's going to be important in making successful life transitions? We have a caller with us on the line. We do have Julie with us. Hello, Julie.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great to have you on. Now,
thank you.
Tell us about your situation. What's your story?
Okay, so I have three daughters who are 29, 25, and 22. And we spent some of our time, most of our time in the UK where they were educated, but they were also educated in Kuwait and here in Dubai. And through several different moves and changes with their university and with their workplace, we have had in 22 years a total of 5 weeks empty nest syndrome.
Wow. It's not a lot of time to yourself, is it, Julie?
No, but do you know, with anything, there are benefits and blessings. And yes, we always have a time where when the dynamics shift, we have a couple of days to transfer and transition to those that shift, but actually you do. You know, this morning I dropped my youngest daughter. I dropped her off at work, and she had made me this amazing smoothie. Mm. Last night when I got home, you know, another one had made dinner. My eldest daughter at the minute is traveling in Brazil on holiday and having a great time, but there's still that connection, telling us all what she's doing, and so it's really, really lovely. I mean.
So you're not feeling like, you know, because some parents, they feel the loss of it all, but you are seeing it in a whole different light.
Oh, my daughters really helped me. You know, I have trouble. I'm such a luddite when it comes to the Mac, but my daughters, they'll come in and they help me. And, you know, with my work, they'll, you know, help me type things up because they can type so much better. It's give and take, and it's the same within any relationship. It's, you know, I've been with my husband for 37 years, and it's the exact same with him. It's give and take. Now, it's not perfect, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying it's perfect, because it's not. But, like, for example, my husband now, he takes my second daughter to work every morning and picks her up most evenings. And that part of his day, that is so special. And it's something that we didn't think we'd have. And so he has conversations with her. You know, she's now 25, so he has these adult conversations with her. But yet there's still that wonderful trust of father and daughter. So it's really about making it work.
You know, Julie, I think one of the most beautiful things about the story that you're saying is that it sounds like your family was very close before they even left. And it was something that you continued to do after they left as well. And it wasn't that transition wasn't something that put a dent in your relationship. If anything, it fostered it into different ways.
Very much so. And it is about working at the relationship. It's about, but also about having boundaries. You know, always boundaries at home. Like, you know, there was times where there was no screen time, which they didn't like. But it's also about respect. So from a very, very, very young age, my philosophy and my husband's philosophy is to bring our children up with respect. We will get a respectful child back. And that, I think, has also worked. And that's not to say, you know, the three personalities of the girls are so different. And I've had to parent them in very different ways. But again, it's about working out what, because there isn't a one size fits all, but it is, when you put the time in, like any relationship, you put that time in. I remember a poet said, the greatest gift that we can ever give a child is time. And it is. It absolutely is. And I do feel that we need to come back and give our children a little bit more time, because we have that sense, we should have that sense of responsibility to our children.
It's incredibly beautiful, Julie, what you're describing. And, you know, as they grow, you're always giving them the time, but it's now, as they're grown adults, you're enjoying a whole different way of spending that time together. So thank you so much for sharing that story.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for letting me be on.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep. I love that story from Julie, just about how it's changed, how they've grown together as a family, and how, yes, there is emptiness syndrome, but they still bring themselves together. They find ways of connecting every day and not missing out on what's going on.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they raise their kids to really have respect, not just for their parents, but also the parents to have respect for their kids. And they spent a lot of time. She said time is so important to give to your kids, and it's not quantity, it's quality. So you can literally be sitting next to your child for 6 hours and not even look at them or play with them. That's not time. That's just physical presence.
Parents need to be putting down the phone too, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I feel like at least children and teenagers and even younger children understand when not to use technology, even though sometimes they can be a little bit grabby and they always want to be on it. But I feel like because as adults, we haven't really grown up with this technology. So for us, it's very new and we want more and more and more of it. And sometimes we do things that are so mindless on the phone, whereas we would have never done it before. And instead of, you know, spending time with our kids.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.
We're talking big life transitions today. We're talking about whether it's your kids going off to university for the first time and experiencing emptiness syndrome, or in fact something called, which I just realized today, I've been feeling it, but I just realized it has a name, full emptiness syndrome, where your kids are still at home, but you're experiencing a change, a transition in their own growing up, their own journey, and it's not the same. They're becoming their own people. You don't quite communicate the same. What is going on? Maybe you've just become a parent for the first time. Maybe you're dealing with elderly parents. So many different life transitions that we are looking at today, that we are discussing with Dr. Thoraya Kanafani. She is clinical psychologist and clinical director at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's been really interesting, really fascinating first hour, and plenty of messages coming in from people about what they're experiencing. Let's go to some of those now. We've got one from Amal, who says, I have two kids with different ages, 11 and 4. They've got different needs. When watching TV before dinner, my eldest decided to watch TV in her father's office, which is on the left side of the house. My youngest watching Disney cartoons in the living room. I'm in the kitchen. It feels lonely and depressing. You know, it's something that nobody tells you about when you are having kids. There's a lot of talk about, you know, there is going to be that empty nest syndrome when they leave home. But actually, you can have that full empty nest syndrome, which we were just talking about, where they're going off. They're doing their own thing. And then suddenly you're still there all together in the same house, but everybody's off doing something.
You know, it's interesting because when you were reading this, I was thinking to myself, well, why isn't everybody just watching a movie together in the living room or in the father's office? You know, I mean, sometimes we forget that in these kind of things, yes, children have different needs, but they don't necessarily have to be that different. I mean, an 11-year-old and a 4-year-old, if both of them are watching, you know, Disney cartoons and the other one's watching something else, I would first like to know what the 11-year-old is watching all the way on the room on her own, only because I work with teenagers, so I'm always a little bit skeptical.
She's
when they're
probably
on
watching a YouTube video. That's what they're watching. 11-year-olds are on
right.
YouTube. They're not
which
watching
also
TV.
Worries me, because there's always like, watch this afterwards, and you never know what those are. So yeah. I always like to have, you know, as the teenage years start rolling in, the tweens, you know, I like kids to be more in open areas when they're yes. watching anything on the iPad or the iPhone or YouTube in general. But in that case, I would do something more together. Try to have, you know, you can watch a movie together, all four, you know, all three of you or all four of you if your husband's around. So things like, yes, the 11-year-old may not necessarily enjoy Disney cartoons, but you can watch a Disney movie because, you know, 11-year-olds are watching Disney movies and so are 4-year-olds. And so that's something that the three of you can do together. Or you can all play a game. So I know that there are times when certain things like this are going to happen, but when they're recurring over and over again, this is where you need to step in and say, okay, no, we need to spend some quality time together, which means we're all doing things together.
Speaking of quality time, I love this message from Christopher. He says, I set aside a day each weekend for each son, giving us a dedicated time together with dad. It becomes their day and I get one-on-one time with them. And with six sons, that takes a lot of time, but it's worth the time. That's just an incredible commitment to doing that, making sure you've got six sons and you give them that time.
I would like to first congratulate and shake hands with his wife for his six sons and surviving that. But definitely that is that. I mean, that 1 hour is golden for each child, and that child will never forget that time because, you know, especially with the father, because I know that. A lot of families are dual income families, but you know, the mother is always sort of expected to be there and to nurture and these kind of things, but the father is so important for especially boys as well as girls. But having that time alone with dad is just as important as having time alone with mom or spending time with mom. So the fact that you're providing that to your sons is such a great thing and something they won't forget, and most probably they'll do with their kids as they get older.
You know, it's very difficult. There are a lot of parents who work so much, long hours. It is difficult for them to find that time with their kids. What do you suggest? What do you say to those parents who might say, well, you know what? I'm under so much pressure at work. It is really difficult for me.
You know, I usually say if you have 5 minutes to go on your phone, you have 5 minutes to spend with your kid. So ultimately, there are enough hours in the day to work really hard. And I know a lot of people in the city work extremely hard. Even if you're running a 12-hour shift, you still have some time to spend with your kids, even if it's just 5 minutes. Again, it's not the quantity of time, it's the quality of the time that you spend with them. And it could be right before they go to bed, you can read them a bedtime story, you can sing a song with them, you can, you know, play with them, build a puzzle, whatever it is. But spend, if you have time, 5 minutes to be on your phone, you have 5 minutes for your children.
Okay. And it's something that you find later on in life, you know, parents might come back and say, well, actually, I think I spent too much time at the office, and to regret not spending enough time with their own children and getting to know their own children and cultivating that relationship.
In that case, I would say you have to build a proper work-life balance. Mm. So sometimes, you know, certain companies are really good at allowing people to go home and work from home as long as the work is done. So in that case, maybe discussing some sort of plan with your company in order to really have proper time for you at work as well as proper time for you at home.
Definitely look into doing that. Another message saying, I think faith plays a crucial role towards understanding and accepting issues or situations that we go through life, and accepting that there is a reason or a wisdom behind things happening. Whether you know it or not, everything happens for a reason.
I think that's it's a very beautiful way of looking at life. Not a lot of people, you know, may find comfort in that, but at the same time, you know, I truly believe that everything happens for a reason. Sometimes you know, we just have to wait for that reason, and we don't necessarily get things that we want in the moment, but maybe something better comes along. But it is important for you to not sort of feel very passive in that process either. It is a very active process in general, so you have to be part of that and not just sort of, like, you know, wash your hands of doing anything and say, well, whatever happens happens, right? Mm. I mean, you can't, like, jump off of a building and say, well, if I die, I die. It's sort of, you really need to try to be on the right path for yourself, but at the same time hope for the best. And I think this is the same when it comes to children. You do your best and hopeful for the best, but at the same time, you can't just sort of say, well, you know, if they care, and if I spend time with them, I spend time with them.
True. I think it helps in situations where, if you're experiencing loss, the loss of a loved one, for example, you know, you're experiencing a death in the family or something to that effect, or dealing with your own emotions where your children are moving on. Actually, it's a great thing, but you are finding it difficult, you know, to remind yourself that actually this is all just part of a much bigger picture. And, you know, they are going through something great, even though it may not be so good for you, and to get you through that time as well.
Right. And I think it's also to recognize that in that moment, you are the adult, and it's not always about you in mm-hmm. that moment. I mean, the child is the one who is sort of going through a big change. And it's not that you're not going through it as well, but you need to sort of also be mindful of the fact that the child still needs you, even though, you know, when we played the clip in the beginning of the show, right? In that moment, she completely disregarded the fact that he might be putting on a front that he's okay as he's leaving, because he wants to, you know, he wants to be okay. But for her, she made it all about her. She made it, you know, and took it to quite an extreme, an intensive extreme, and put pressure on him that, you know, that this is the worst day of my life. Now you're leaving. What's left for me? Well, it's not about you in that moment. And I think sometimes we have to remove ourselves and remind ourselves that, yes, some things are difficult in life, but at the same time, it's better for our children. And that's what we need to keep in mind.
They're the big transitions that have to happen, and they need to move on, and they're moving on to bigger and better things. More of your questions as well and comments coming in on 4001 and on the Dubai Eye app. Please do keep them coming in so that we can get to them in time. Otherwise, they do come in too late and then we don't get to them. This is an interesting comment saying, I think that kids are growing up very sheltered in a place like Dubai. How can you suitably prepare your kids for the realities of being a global citizen? I mean, when we go back home, we see things like, for example, homeless people, people who are experiencing extreme hardship. That is something that we may come across more when we go back home to the UK, the US, Australia, wherever it is. We don't see so much of that here. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, you know, yes, living in the UAE, I mean, the government has done such a great job at protecting us in the most way that they can. But
we're
it's
so
not.
Lucky. Yeah.
We are very lucky to be in a place like the UAE because crime here is quite low. However, it's not non-existent. There is crime here in different ways. You know, there are drugs here. There is violent crime. There is poverty in different areas of the Emirates. But the reality is that instead, you know, shelter just means that we're not seeing it. But children don't have to be exposed to these things in order for them to live a non-sheltered life. They can be taught these things, that these things exist. And they do exist in Dubai, but we have a great government and a great system to protect us from seeing it at a bigger extent. Mm. But they must be taught these things, and it is the parents' responsibility and even the school's responsibility to educate them about the different dangers that are out there in the world. So you can still educate and make them more aware about things in life without sheltering them.
And also, there are lots of different ways to volunteer. There are also different ways to make a difference to people's lives. Throughout the year, there are different campaigns that are running. And it's encouraging to get your kids involved in those. Schools often participate as well, which teach them about the realities of life and that there are those who are more in need and how to help out as well.
Of course. I mean, volunteering is such a great way to educate kids about what the reality of life is and what they don't see is actually out there. But also, even having the child sort of figure out what is it that they would like to do to contribute to the world the way it is, and what is it that they like and what they don't like, and what and how are they part of the process of healing different topics that they may not find fair in this world. And it's important for them to see that. And you have to be careful depending on the age of the individual as well, because you don't want to expose younger children to something that they may not necessarily be ready to see yet.
On the couch with Dr. Thuraya Kanafani of the Human Relations Institute and Clinics, we are talking about big life transitions today, the things that are going on right now. I mean, university for some, how is it affecting your child? How is it affecting the parents? It's a big, big deal. It's a big time. A lot going on there. But also, Dr. Thuraya is taking questions on all sorts of topics and issues. And on the line, we've got Laurence. Good morning, Laurence. Good afternoon.
Hello, good morning. Good afternoon, yes. I always listen to your program with great interest. And today it really touched me. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of things about young kids and, you know, college and all of that. I've gone through that already. I've got two boys. They're 28 and 29. And my youngest one, the 28 years old one, worked for a while in hospitality and management. He's now saying that's not what he wants to do. Wants to go with animals. But my main problem is, I don't think he knows what he wants. I think he's just, he's just procrastinating. He's sitting at home playing online games with his thing on his ears, and he's non-communicative, not very helpful. Whenever we try, my husband and I, to give him advice, to try and help him with whatever it is that he wants to explore, he's quite defensive and aggressive, and to be honest, I think he probably needs to see somebody. I don't know what to do to help him to get on and move on with his life and be happy. I need to tell you as well that he has been diagnosed with ADHD when he was a kid, and he suffers from epilepsy today. So that's another thing that, of course, is in my mind all the time, because he doesn't necessarily take his pill regularly and all kind of things like this. So I don't know. I want to help him. I want him to fly. I want him to do what makes him tick, but I don't know what to do to help him.
Dr. Thuraya.
Well, Laurence, to be quite honest, I mean, it is quite a complicated situation that you're discussing right now, because of the fact that, you know, he is epileptic and he's not necessarily taking his medication, which is not helpful at all. And to be, you know, for him to have studied hospitality and management and then stopped and then wanted to do something else but is not having the motivation, it actually a little bit sounds like he is suffering with some depressive symptoms because he's sort of isolating, he's becoming quite irritable. This could definitely be something that he might need to work on with a professional. But in that sense, I would also want to suggest to you and your husband to maybe really have a sit down with him, a more serious sit down, and tell him what is it that he's scared of, because it seems that he's scared to jump into something new, almost like he might be scared that he doesn't, you know, just as he did hospitality and management to begin with, and then he realized that this is not what he wants. Maybe he's scared because he doesn't know what he wants, and that could be quite overwhelming.
No, he doesn't. I mean, yesterday, actually, he's very fascinated by anything to do with gaming and computing and all of that. He's not very academic. The study line is not really what he needs. So yesterday, I was saying, because his first love, very, very early on, was animals. And when he was about 19, 20, he worked for about a year at the vet in Abu Dhabi as an assistant nurse with no qualification. And he was a natural. He's got a great handling with animals. He could put a catheter into small animals. He was trusted to do quite a lot of stuff. And we thought, oh, great, he's going to go that way. But when he came to do a course, he actually chose to do hospitality and management. I think probably because he was scared of not being able to do a veterinary type course. And he kind of fell back onto this thinking, okay, that's going to be easier. But it's not what he wants to do. He wants to be with animals. So I don't think, you know, Ben yesterday was saying, oh, well, I would love to work with computer. And I said, well, research it then, you know, I don't know, get online, have a look, maybe do an internship, do some volunteering, it doesn't have to be paid at the moment, we're still here, you know, we can enjoy the fact that we can still help you at the moment to find your way. And we've done that with our other son, who, you know, put us through exactly the same thing a year ago. He moved from teaching to wanting to go into politics again, which was his first love. And we've helped him through that. He's done an internship, and now he's doing an MA, and he's off, you know. But my youngest one, not having that academic thing to fall back onto, needs probably something like apprenticeship, you know, volunteering. But he's not looking. What worries me is I've got more, you know, I seem to be more engaged myself to try and help than he is to help himself.
Well, like I said before, you know, it sounds that he might actually be going through some depressive symptoms, because a lot of what you're mentioning, it does really look like depressive symptoms, but the depression also must have been triggered by maybe his confusion in life. So what I would suggest is maybe to help him either see a professional, or maybe even ask him to see a career counselor, somebody that might help him and guide him to where exactly he may want to be in a different way. So it's I know where you're coming from, and you've tried one scenario with your other son and it worked and it went well, but maybe with your youngest son it might be a little bit more complicated, that you might want to tackle it in a completely different way, because at this point at this point, you know, what worked with one son may not necessarily work with the other.
Laurence, I just ask you quickly, before we go, just how are you feeling about it all as his mum? You sound very anxious about it.
Oh, extremely. And I know I'm not dealing with it the right way at all. I'm much too head on and confront, you know, I confront him sometime. And I know, you know, I always apologize to him when I kind of let rip, you know, but it's so frustrating, you know, to really try and come with such a variety of options, because what I'm just telling you about internship, we've talked about so many other things. My husband sat with him and they did, you know, a brain, what do you call it? You
brainstorming,
know, when you put,
yeah.
That's it. And you know, and we've done that before, and he goes all over the place. You know, I don't think he's as mature as he should be, and that's part of his condition. I'm aware of that. But you know, it's just, it's frustrating. We're coming to retirement, both my husband and I, and, you know, we want him out and comfortable and happy. And I am not, you know, I don't know. He's really ruling my life at the moment. You know, you put your finger on it. He's, you know, he's all I think about and all I worry about. And yeah, I mean, I sometimes go through the silent treatment. Then when I don't speak, because I think if I don't speak, we won't have an argument. But then, you know, there's the guilt of, you know, not. Oh, it's just like you said, it's so complicated. And I know we need help, but, you know, I just don't know where to go with this. Maybe he has asked about seeing a career, a consultant, you know, and he saw a life coach years ago for a little while, which helped at the time, but really it's just like a bandage. You know, it's just like superficially helps and he comes back all hyped up and everything. And then it's just like nothing happened.
I think,
you know,
I think what Dr. Thuraya is, I think her advice is the best, to say that it is a really complicated situation. There's more to it than I think what you might be seeing. So I hope it all works out, that you do see a professional, and it best of luck with that.
Yes. Could you actually send me the number of a career counselor or Dr. Thuraya? Could she advise on that? Because I really don't know where to look.
Online, on the Dubai Today website, we're going to be getting in touch with you, and you can get in touch with the Human Relations Institute and clinics as well. We will have their details there. You can get in touch with them. And as well, we will be letting you know about who you might be able to contact when it comes to career counselling as well.
That would be great.
Thanks.
Would be really great. I would really appreciate that.
Thanks for your call, Laurence. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
All the best. All the best. I don't think she's alone, Dr. Thuraya. I think there are situations where you've got parents who are dealing with difficult situations like that. There's a lot going on, but it is something that you need to seek professional help on.
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, these kind of situations are not as black and white as, you know, it might sound to others, that, oh, you know, tough love, get him out of the house. It's not that simple, because there must be something else that's going on there. And I think it's important to tackle it from a different way. Even though it, you know, her current strategy worked for one son, this son obviously seems to be different. And there are a lot more positive things about him as well that maybe we need to tackle and not just focus on what's not working.
Exactly. Plenty more of your questions. A lot more coming up. We are talking big life transitions with Dr. Thuraya Kanafani.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.
Talk to me. Samantha, how was your week? I don't know, Dad, it was kind of tough. Billy and Ellen broke up, and Ellen's kind of mad at me because she saw me talking to Billy in the cafeteria. And you remember that sculpture I was working on? Well, it was a unicorn, and the horn broke off, so now it's a zebra, okay? But I still think I'm going to get an egg, right? Mason, how was your week? Well, Dad, you know, it's kind of tough. Joe, he's kind of a jerk. Actually, he stole some cigarettes from his mom. He wanted me to smoke them, but I said no, because I knew what a hard time you had quitting smoking, Dad. How about that? Is that so hard?
Dad, these questions are kind of hard to answer.
What is so hard to answer? About what sculpture are you making?
It's abstract.
Okay, that's good. See, that's, I didn't know that. I didn't know you were even interested in abstract art.
I'm not. They make us do it.
But, Dad, I mean, why is it all on us, though? You know, what about you? How was your week? You know, who do you hang out with? Do you have a girlfriend? What have you been up to?
I see your point. So we should just let it happen more naturally, right? That's what you're saying. Okay, that's what we'll do. Starting now.
Because there is that time when your kids won't stop talking. They're yapping and yapping, and you're wishing for that quiet moment, and then they grow up and then they stop talking. It is difficult. It's one of those big life transitions. We're talking to Dr. Thuraya Kanafani about it all. What do you think about that clip? That is also from Boyhood. That's a bit earlier on in the film, where Mason is about 10 years old. And, you know, What is that stage where kids just don't want to talk about stuff anymore? What's going on?
I think a big part of it is also about you know, not just looking at it from a child perspective, but just looking at it from a human perspective. If you're with a friend and you guys are just sort of sitting and you're doing something and you're watching TV, you're walking along the beach, you have that quiet moment sometime where things are just not said. If your friend looked at you and said, well, how was work? What did you do? How are things with your husband? How are things with your wife? Tell me, talk to me. Like, and that pressure, you almost feel like, you know what? Just go away. I want to just walk up right now. So I think a big part of the fear that parents develop that their kids are pulling away from them contributes to that over anxious, clingy type of behavior where it's like, why don't you talk to me anymore? Why don't you tell me? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And that actually just pulls children further and further away. And as you saw in this clip, it's the realization that we're all human and sometimes we just don't want to talk, or sometimes we're tired, sometimes we have something on our mind, sometimes it's just we're just not in the mood. And it's okay for teenagers and children to have those moments as well, and to just respect that in them, and you know, and just go through the motion of, you know, I'm always here if you ever want to talk. And
yeah,
you know, sort of letting them know that you're there if they need you, but at the same time respecting that maybe at that point they just don't.
Quite frankly, at the end of the day, if anybody wants to talk to me, I don't want to talk. So I totally get it. I'm just like, you know, and sometimes my 11-year-old just wants to rant. And so I just let her have that space. Then she's like, she feels bad about, you know, shouting or whatever. But I know that she's just kind of shouting into the ether. She just wants to get it out then, you know. And she's like, oh, thanks for letting me just go on, Mum, there. I'm like, it's fine. It's good. Just let it out. Because sometimes you just really need to let it out. It's the opposite of what we saw here. But sometimes you just need to like shout at something or someone and just be heard.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you?
Absolutely. And that can sometimes be difficult, not just with parents, but even with friendships, but mainly with parents when kids are sort of venting. They feel like, oh, I have to solve their problem now. And in that moment, you just have to listen, because what they're looking for is somebody to acknowledge how they're feeling, and they're not looking for you to save them. They're just looking for someone to talk to
and just to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Big skill that we're still trying to master. But I love this message. This one came in from Jane. She's asking, my daughter started uni but is missing home and feeling overwhelmed. How can I help being so far away? So I'm guessing that she's at uni and in her home country. She's not here. Jane is here. How can you help your kids when they're not with you, particularly not in the same country?
Well, I would answer this in two ways. One way would be to see what it is that your daughter is looking for. Does she want to Skype with you every day for maybe 15, 20 minutes a day? Does she want a message from you every day to help her move forward? So see what she needs in order to help her with this process. That's one side of this answer. But the other side of the answer is, it's okay that she misses you.
Mm.
You don't have to save her. You don't have to take care of her. And you don't have to, you know, appease the feelings of feeling overwhelmed. Your daughter needs to learn how to do that on her own. And she needs to develop those independent skills as well. So it's okay to take a step back. I know as a mother, you just want to go in and save and take care of. But sometimes when you do that, you're overprotecting and you're coddling rather than just, you know, allowing them to develop in the necessary ways they need to.
That's kind of, it's a big relief hearing that as a parent, because you're just like, oh, phew, okay, I don't have to be there to just catch every little fall or anything that's going on. They can make their own way. You've brought them up all this time. They're out into the real world. You've done a good job. Just trust in it and it'll be fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, another question, this one from Dee. How do we balance quality time and homework, finding it takes all afternoon, that the shower time, and it feels like there's no quality time with the kids, and she is a stay-at-home mum. It can be really difficult. I feel like kids these days have a lot of homework. There's a lot that they've got to get done, and they're busy doing that, and so finding the time maybe during the week is difficult.
It absolutely is. I mean, to be quite honest, I have never seen kids receive so much homework like they do now. It's very difficult, but at the same time, it's not impossible. So remember what we talked about before, about quality time doesn't have to be quantity. It's just quality. So even if you're just at the dinner table, no matter how much homework ever everybody has, no matter what they need to do, no matter how much work you have, at the dinner table, all phones are gone, all electronics are turned off, and you just have that quality time with your children. Or, you know, you need to go to the supermarket, you need to pick something up, take a child with you. Or if you need to get something for them, go with them. So it's about finding time wherever you can, even when you don't have much time, but utilizing that in the best way that you can to spend quality time together.
I'm trying to maybe even make the most of drop-off and pick-up time and all of that, you know, whatever you can do, but as well, kind of letting go, like we were saying earlier, and just not expecting, oh, you know, every detail has to be shared in those moments and we have to talk the whole time and it's fine.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be, you know, like a full hour of doing something together. And usually with girls, especially in the teenage years, they like to get their hair done, their nails done. So take them, go with them, have a sit down. You know, they can't run away in that moment. So that's a good that's a good time to spend with them too. So, and they can't really use their phone because their hands are being done. So these kinds of things like might be a good way to really connect to your children.
Have a spa day.
Exactly.
If you have girls, that's a good thing. Have a spa day. You've only got a few more minutes to get your questions in and your comments in for Dr. Thuraya. So please get those in on 4001 and on the Dubai Eye app. We've got one here. I really like this because we were talking earlier about empty nest syndrome. What happens when the kids leave and then the spouses are left seeing each other for the first time in maybe 17 years, 20 years, whatever it is. One asking, how do married couples remain physically attracted to each other as they grow into old people? We are going to answer that question and more after this. This question came in earlier, Dr. Thuraya, asking, how do married couples remain physically attracted to each other as they grow into older people?
Well, you know, I think I need to separate this question a bit because it's very important to sort of look at it from different angles. One of the things is a medical angle. So as people get older, obviously there are changes in hormones. There's medical illnesses sometimes. There's exhaustion, fatigue, surgeries, you know, differences in desire because due to changes in hormones. So there are many contributing factors. But what's interesting is that research actually shows us that about 72% of couples below the age of 60 are intimately active versus above the age of 60, it's 57%. So it's not a big shift, even though there is a shift. So a lot of couples are continuously intimately active even after the age of 60. But in order for that to happen, communication and emotional connection needs to be rekindled. So for instance, if you're not feeling very close to your partner, it's very hard to become intimately active or physically active with them. So developing and reconnecting emotionally, reconnecting through communication, going and one of the most important things is not expecting that you are supposed to sort of be together the same way you were when you were in your 20s or your 30s, obviously for many different reasons, but it's about looking forward rather than backwards and not comparing what you have now to what you used to have before.
It's a whole new relationship. You should just look at it as a whole new start, really, should you not?
Absolutely.
Just start again and kind of to think like you were getting to know them in the beginning of your relationship, get to know them again because now they've grown into a whole different person and maybe they have different concerns, they have different ideas about life. You know, we don't go through life having the same ideas about what's going on around us, what we're experiencing, and that is something to discover, rediscover.
Of course, and not all relationships require a lot of physical sort of, you know, attraction and or even intimate activity. I mean, ultimately, every couple is attracted to each other in different ways, and physically is not the only way that matters. There are a lot of things, especially when you go through so much together. So ultimately, maybe as you get older, the physical aspect to it is not as important as the emotional aspect to it. And that's where you have to reconsider your relationship and not look at it as you did before.
Do you have to start having date nights again if you weren't already?
I think it's very, very helpful for it to have date nights because it's about, again, it goes back to reconnecting. and learning more about each other and learning different things about each other. Because when you're together for a very long time, you're growing up together. And sometimes when you're very busy with children, with work, with things like that, you don't necessarily see the other person growing. So
you feel like you're growing up separately almost.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So this is a good way to reconnect.
Definitely. Another big life transition that we haven't touched on too much just yet, but it's the one when your kids move from primary school to high school. They're moving from probably the preteen years into those early teen years, and that the kind of changes that can happen, how they can take that. You know, often they're changing schools as well. And talking to my own child about it, and she's like, people change. People completely change. The same people that you were talking to before, they change a lot between primary school and high school. They're not the same. They think differently. They're physically different. Take us through some of the things that we need to be aware of as to what's going on for young people.
Well, for them, obviously, other than the environment that changes, it's also what is expected of them that changes. So, you know, when you're in middle school and primary school, you're not as independent of a learner. You are really just, you're almost handheld through the process and through the educational process. But as you get into the high school years, you're expected to become much more of an independent learner. You're supposed to do things on your own. You're supposed to ask questions when you need help. You're supposed to like talk to the counselors when you need to. So there's a lot of expectations that are had on them, and they don't necessarily have those skills to apply them. There's also a lot of social pressure. You mentioned something about physical changes. So there's a lot of changes that happen in the puberty years, and so the physical body is changing, hormonally everybody's changing, urges are coming out, thoughts are developing, so they don't know how to handle those. They're also too embarrassed to talk to their parents about. There's like the social pressure of being liked by everybody. Are you in the popular group? Are you not in the popular group? Bullying can take place during that time as well. So there are a lot of changes that those teenagers or tweens actually go through that are very overwhelming as well as scary for a lot of them. So it's important for parents to be very understanding as well as very patient, because hormonally, though, that also leads to a lot of mood swings, and that's not just with females, it's also with males as well. So
the guys can have those mood swings too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even physiologically, we know that men have what is equivalent to a woman's PMS every month as well. They go through about 2 or 3 days of hormonal changes every single month. It's pretty much the exact same thing as the PMS period for a lot of women. It's the same thing as andropause and menopause. So what we know for women as menopause, men go through, which is andropause, but for some reason we call it midlife crisis for them, and we sugarcoat it rather than realize that this is also a hormonal change for them as well.
It's just so much to think about and so much to consider, and but just to take it easy. It is you're gonna get through it. They're gonna get through it, you know, when they're that age. It can be a funny and difficult time at the same time, with all of those changes taking place and the big life transitions. But it has been a fascinating discussion with you, Dr. Thoraya. Thank you so much. Dr. Thoraya Kanafani is clinical psychologist and clinical director at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Of course, you can find all of the details on how to get in touch with you, Dr. Thoraya, on our Dubai Today page. All of the information is there on our blog. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sally.
We'll be seeing you again soon.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.